Welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Janice Wolf. And today we're going to talk about the weather. Again, yes, we're talking about the weather. Well, we've got this kind of crazy March going on where we had this ridiculously snowy February. And I've seen everybody getting their dogs groomed because last week was warm. So everybody decided that it was now time to get their dogs groomed. Well, the problem is if you groom your dog, especially if you're grooming your dog on a kind of a short coat, you might need to actually put a coat on your dog. Remember that they get used to a certain type of temperature. They get used to being kind of what they are. So today we are going to talk a little bit about proper grooming, proper brushing of dogs who may need to, be curtailed a bit, right? So we have a lot of standard poodles in Merlin's kit, and we don't really use a lot of the design. We don't really use many, if any, of the designer dogs because of the, you never know what you're going to get. It's kind of like Forrest Gump said, life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. But we do use a lot of standard poodles, and I've seen people grooming dogs and taking them much, much, much too short. It's always good to keep a little bit of hair on the dog, even like a half an inch or so. People tend to say, well, it's expensive to groom, so I want to get them, as short as I can so that it lasts longer. But, that's kind of like shaving your head. And then, because you get an extra 2 weeks out of it. So think about, especially in this kind of temperature, your dogs can get cold. I've had earlier today, I had two calls in rapid fire succession. Both of them have poodle mixes. One's a Maltese poodle, and the other is, a Cavalier poodle. And they both have, that kind of hair. And both of them said, my dog is shaking and shivering. He got so nervous. He's scared. Well, they're also young puppies. One's about 7 months. The other's, about 8 or 9 months. And what happens is you have a dog who's already in a fear phase. You're shaving them down a lot of times, especially Maltese. Anything with Maltese in it, they have very, very sensitive skin. I mean, anything with a silky white coat is going to have really sensitive skin. Think old person with white hair on Coumadin, okay? So I've seen people who, and good groomers, not that, it's just hard. Even good groomers who will, do a hack job because, unfortunately, the hair pulls, right? So you have to keep grooming your dog. Even though you're taking it to a groomer, you should still remember to brush out the knots. The reason these dogs usually get hooked onto, the hair gets hooked onto the clipper blades is that there's a knot or a mat or a tangle. So think about the same thing as if you never brushed your own hair and you just got a haircut, every 8 weeks. Imagine what you'd look like. Same kind of thing as that. So instead of getting this wickedly short, short coat and puppy cut, where the dog is down to the skin, tell your groomer to leave 2 weeks. Just say, give me a week or two of growth on there. So for March, April, if we get a cold March, if we get a cool April, your dog's going to be freezing. So in the winter, and when you are doing, a grooming on these mixed breed, poodle mixes, and even on a purebred poodle, just make sure that you're not having them get it as short as they possibly can. Remember, especially with standard poodles, why poodles, everybody laughs, oh, they have that ridiculous haircut. You know why they have that ridiculous haircut? There's a reason for everything in dog shows. The reason they have that, and Portuguese water dogs have a similar one, they have the big giant hair around their chest, right? So this big giant bubble of hair, because they're water dogs and they're out in the cold and out and sometimes, hunting, right, and working. And so the hair that's actually growing around there keeps the heart and the lungs and the kidneys and everything but the kidneys, vital organs, keeps them warm. The two really oddly placed ones, like in the middle back of the dog, those are actually to cover the kidneys, to keep the kidneys warm when the dog is cold or in water. So there's a reason for that. And then the ones around the bottom of the feet, like by the wrist of the dog, those are to keep the digits and the wrists warm when they're out and cold or swimming. So, you know, you think about it for a minute, it kind of makes sense. That's why they have those crazy cuts. The ears have hair. Why? To keep the ears from freezing. So there is a reason for all of that. But once you start cutting the hair off of a dog who was meant to have one, or is a mix of what was meant to have them, you have to start thinking maybe the dog is going to suffer for it. Now, it's not that he's going to suffer and he's going to, you know, freeze to death, but especially if you have a young dog, not that he couldn't, right? But if you have a young dog who is impressionable and who's in a fear phase between 4 and 14 months of age, which a lot of you guys have, immediately the thing that jumps up into my brain is these dogs are going to be shaking. What are you going to do? You're going to go up and go, oh, it's okay, I'll cuddle you. So the thing is with shaking and shivering mimics fear, okay? So if you go in, and I learned this the hard way working with a lot of aggressive dogs over a lot of years, if you go into a home, and even if you love dogs, but you're really cold and you're shivering or shaking, the dog picks that up as you're being fearful, anxious, nervous, and he may react to you. So that's why a lot of times I find, personally, there are more issues with bites with dogs in colder climates in the wintertime or in the cold weather, because the person is standing outside, maybe you didn't let them in, whatever happened. And because of that, all of a sudden, the dog is shivering and shaking, and you're reinforcing it, and it mimics fear. And, you know, the person walks in, and the dog barks or growls or, you know, gives a very either angry or fearful look to that person. And now we start a bad behavior. So let's just think about that for a minute. Try to be smart about it, all right? When you have, like, especially if it's really bitter cold winter, when you have people come in, don't have the dog right there. Let your guest come in. Bring the dog in. Very often, it's a great idea to bring the dog in after the person has already come in. A lot of dogs have issues at the front door. I'm going to be running out. This is a crazy weekend again. If anybody has an issue and you need me or one of our people to come help you, you can let us know. You can actually give us a call at 855-449-9288. And it's really a good thing, typically, to start looking at why your dog has behaviors and trying to fix them before they happen. And we all know with COVID, and God knows, I don't think there's been a week we've had a class that I haven't, unfortunately, had to mention it. And hopefully now we're starting to get people on their double vaccines. You know, that will be great. But, you know, it's still, we're wearing masks. We're staying away from each other. We're putting together, you know, a very, very strange profile. People are coming in and they're acting really kind of oddly, you know. So if you can think about it this way, you want to bring people in so that the dog is already seeing somebody who comes in. They just kind of show up. And that's a good way to start out with a non-fearful, non-aggressive dog. This all applies basically to just being able to understand the difference. So I'm not going to give you, and I've never done this on any of my TV or radio or any of the shows I've ever done. I'm not going to give you like, hey, this is what you shouldn't do at home. Go body slam your dog onto the ground because he jumped on you. Please don't try that. I know a lot of you have seen things through the years. That is not valid. You do not do that. The only time that would happen, and it needs to be done by somebody who is a professional, and not even dog trainers know really, you've got to know how to do things. There's so many things you can do before you get to that, and should do. That would be like if one of your kids got a B, and you told the kid, you're not going out for the next, whatever, however long. It's just very, very kind of misguided to see that, some of the things that people do, and then the dog stops trusting them. So let's talk about, how can we avoid that? When you have a young puppy and we're in the midst of a horrible pandemic. I mean, this is crazy what's been going on the last year, a little over a year. But because of the pandemic, a lot of people are not having visitors or guests. And everybody thought it was just a brilliant idea to go and buy a dog or adopt a dog or go buy, a pet store dog or a, poorly bred, which, purebred dogs doesn't mean that they're great either. But a purebred show dog from Grand Champion and Champion Parents, somebody cares. Because when you're a show breeder, you breed to better your breed, right? You breed to make your breed stronger, to make them healthier, to make them live longer. So that's where that's so important. And when we don't do it that way, and we breed, somebody's Maltese to somebody's toy poodle, or somebody's, I just heard a crazy one, a Shar Pei mixed with a poodle. I mean, I'm sure it's adorable. I'm sure it's got all kinds of skin issues. It's probably got all kinds of temperament issues. You take something that, like Cavalier King Charles Spaniels are one of my favorite dogs. They have a lot of heart issues. Somebody thought it was a good idea to breed a Cavalier and a Boxer. Well, let's pick two dog breeds that have horrible hearts and cancers. Let's figure that out. And let's pick, a Shih Tzu and a Pug and breed them together because their eyeballs pop out at random times. It's a cute party trick, but not at your dog's expense. So start thinking about, does it make sense to do that? There are so many people who should never have gotten dogs, who got a dog, and they're good people. It's not that they're not good people, but they have no clue of what to do. So I've been remarkably busy. I thought when the pandemic started that I wasn't going to have any business. I thought this is going to be tough. Nobody's going to be, wanting anybody to come into their house. Well, we were able to work outside with most of it, or we keep a very, very, good distance, socially distancing, of like about 10 feet. And we have been doing really well with it. So, the goal is that at some point, all these puppies that have been purchased or adopted by people who never had a dog or never, they had a dog as a kid, because that's my favorite. I've had dogs my whole life. Well, first of all, you're 22. You don't have a whole life yet. And your parents trained your last two dogs. You did not train your dogs. So what happens is that these people go out and get a dog, and they go, oh, look, I found one for, only $1,200 for a, the same dog that I could have gotten, from a show breeder for $4,000 or $3,000. And usually it's not even a variance about that. Usually if you can get, let's say, a show dog is $2,500, $3,000, these designer things are like $4,000, $2,000, $5,000, crazy numbers. And you're basically, whether you like it or not, you're not rescuing the dog. You are continuing to perpetuate people breeding and breeding and breeding and breeding and breeding dogs who should not be born. I don't have anything against the dogs themselves, and I don't have anything against the people. But people, please get yourself educated. You have to understand that, yes, a dog needs to eat twice a day. And no, they don't automatically go to the bathroom in your toilet and flush the toilet, because you wouldn't believe how many people say this. And I sit there and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. You just got to be kidding me. How can people actually think that that's what's going on? So, you know, we've got to get smart here at some point. So what should you do? All right, you got a dog. You bought it from, you know, a pet store. You bought it from a puppy mill. You bought it from, you know, Joe Schmo down the road who bred his, you know, fox terrier with a toy poodle, with a bull mastiff or whatever it is. And, you know, it's crazy. And they're charging all kinds of crazy amounts. And all they have to do is come up with a cute name, like, Shih Tzu Bichon is a Shishan. Well, okay, how about we just call it a mutt, which is what it is that you just paid $4,000 for. Now, why do I get upset about this? Because, you know, all of you have to know I'm a big proponent of rescue, huge proponent of rescue. But there's a difference when you go to an AKC show breeder and a show breeder of merit, not just that they're AKC breeders, but they're an AKC show breeder. They show their dogs. We spend so much money. You have no idea. I've got one of my dogs who I've spent well over $100,000 showing. Now, we have something going on where we have sponsors for her, so we do get donations in on that. But basically, what happens is we put out the best dog we can, and we show them. Why do we show them? Are we a bunch of narcissists? Heck no. Well, there probably are a few, but not many. And what happens is we breed them, and then we campaign them, right? It's what we call it, showing them against other good breeders' dogs. So what happens, you have my best dog going against somebody else's best dog, against somebody else's best dog, and there might be 50 of those dogs. And there's one winner for the boys, one winner for the girls. There's a reserve for each. There's a best of winners, which is an overall best of the dogs who are not yet champions. And then there's best of breed, best opposite sex. So if the male wins, the female would get best of op, or vice versa. And then there's something called select, which is for grand champion dogs. So if you're trying to make money, the last thing you're going to do is go spend between, I'd say conservatively, $10,000 and $150,000 easily on just getting your dog a championship. So do we really have a profit motive? We're crazy, I'll tell you that much. Hobby breeders, which is what you want to look for. A hobby breeder is a person who breeds to make the breed better and stronger. We usually don't breed more than maybe 4 litters, 5 litters a year, if that. Some hobby breeders breed every other year. And they are very picky because most hobby breeders, when they are breeding, like myself, when we are breeding dogs, we're breeding to make our dogs stronger, to make them, like, I feel like I want to go into a bionic man kind of thing here, right? Make them stronger, make them faster, make them healthier, make them smarter, make them live longer. That's what a legitimate AKC show breeder does. We spend more money than we will ever get back. We could breed every single heat cycle, which we wouldn't because we're not, a designer disaster breeders. But you might have somebody, maybe they breed their female once, maybe twice, maybe 3 times. It's rare to go above that. And you're talking about people who are spending money on getting OFA, which is Orthopedic Foundation for Animals, OFA or pen hip certifications to make sure that their hips are solid, they don't have hip dysplasia, their elbows don't have elbow dysplasia, they're good, everything is seated the way it's supposed to be. We do thyroid tests, make sure they're not hypothyroid or hyperthyroid, but more common is hypothyroid, low thyroid. We make sure their eyes. We have Bayer and Cerf, B-A-E-R and C-E-R-F, which are different tests and evaluations, actually, where a certain licensed, extra licensed veterinarian that's trained in this is an eye specialist and looks at their eyes to make sure they're not going to have juvenile cataracts or anything that could conceivably continue on and in that line and be perpetuated. Same thing with heart. They oscillate the heart. They make sure there's no, you know, issues with the heart. There's no malfunctions. There's no heart murmurs. And then they grade that, right? And then it, just imagine if you have a dog. Now, we're already way ahead of the designer disaster and puppy mill pet store stuff. We know. So let's say we find a grand champion show dog and it's got bad hips. So how many times would we breed it? A legitimate breeder would not breed it. Even though everybody else was clear, a legitimate breeder would not, because it can come through. It doesn't mean it will come through, but it means it can come through. And you know what? You're pretty much guaranteed, if you're unlucky, that you are going to be the person who gets that dog, who the bad temperament comes through, the cataracts come through, the bad hips, the bad elbows, the bad thyroid, Cushing's and Addison's and von Wildebrand's and everything else, bleeding disorders, heart issues, cancers. Like I just had a person who called me. Her dog literally died at 3 years. It was from a backyard breeder, and her dog literally died at three of a heart tumor. It had a cancer in its heart. So think about that. A three-year-old dog, you should have another 7 years with that dog of good health, depending on the breed, right? And that is why that happens. So if you went to a really good breeder instead of a backyard breeder, because it was only 1,600, all the other good show breeders, 2,500 and up. Yes, but if you bought the 2,500 and up dog, I pretty much guarantee, now there's no 100%, but it'd be a whole lot better chance that your dog isn't going to die at 3 years of age of a heart cancer. They can get hemangiosarcomas. They can get all kinds of crazy things, melanomas, things that are hereditary, you know. So it does pay not only to take good care of your dog, make sure your dog is eating good stuff, make sure you're not using floor cleaners and heavy-duty detergents and things that are on the floor or on your walls where a dog might lick it, or a dog might walk on the floor with like some kind of like Fabuloso or some of these chemicals that are not good, or bleach, you know, you use on the certain things. You have to make sure that that's gone. You have to wash it away or wipe it away somehow, because otherwise it ends up on the dog's feet. It can cause other things, like it can cause damage or irritation, weeks even. But the other problem is dogs then lick their feet, or they lick the wall, or they lick whatever it is, and all of a sudden we've got a problem because now they're getting sick and ingesting it. So it's not just the garlic and onions and, you know, grapes and raisins and all those things. It's really, more of just making sure, that she's going to be, you know, your dog is going to be healthy and your dog is going to live a long time and live that life with good behavior and not having to spend every waking moment babysitting and not having to spend every dollar that you have, so we'll have to, see. What we do with all those, but we do have to take a quick break. So we will take a break and we will return with our next section, our next segment, which is called From Shelter Dog to Service Dog. We'll be right back. And welcome back. So the first segment, we were talking about all kinds of things where we were, hopefully going to change the way some of you guys are looking at the dogs that you've got. But we also had some great dogs that are introduced to us recently. We just had a dog donated, a black lab, and I won't tell you who's it is, but it's a It's a great dog, and the dog is just wonderful. But think about Black Labs, and we're going to train him to be a service dog, and I'm going to give updates on him periodically, probably weekly. And I think this is a great one for everybody because we're going to start doing some videos, and we're going to watch this young 9-month-old Black Lab be turned from an anxious, I mean, he's a real sweet dog, but he's all over the place. And in the home, he's kind of running around. He's going on the counters. He's chewing up expensive shoes and bags and going outside and digging and chewing and jumping and all that. But when he comes to visit with me, he's literally one of the best dogs I've ever dealt with. I love him. So why is it kind of like when your kids are, you know, you get one of your kids' friend's mom who says, oh, your little Joey is such a lovely boy. And you look like my little Joey. My little Joey's a little monster. But you don't say that, of course. So why is it that some dogs, you know, are, you know, sometimes I don't want to say mean or different, but why are they behaving differently than they would at your home? And, you know, that's where we have to talk. So this particular dog, he's a gorgeous, gorgeous Black Lab. His name is Ghost. He is my buddy. He's my shadow. So we take this beautiful dog, lovely family, and we take this beautiful dog, and the moment he sees me, he sits down, he lies down. I didn't give him a command, and he does a little very low-pitched whine, like, like, you know, when the dogs want to see something or they want to come to you, as soon as he heard my voice. I had him off leash. He couldn't have thought at all about running away. I went to open the car, the back of the hatch, and he jumps right up into it, you know, with permission, but, you know, jumps right up into that. And, you know, so basically, why is it that, you know, we have a difference in how a dog's going to behave when the dog is with one family versus with another? And this is where, with Merlin's kids, with our shelter dog to service dog program that's been around for decades, actually when we started Merlin's kids 20, well, it's longer than that, but we renamed it about 20 some odd years ago, I coined that phrase from shelter dog to service dog, which is our SD2 program, because we also train people how to become service dog trainers and how to become canine behaviors. Two different programs, but basically the same kind of thing where we fix problems. And then with the shelter dog to service dog program, we then train these dogs that we rehabilitate the behavioral issues that got them in the shelter or wherever they were. We rehabilitate them, we train them, and then we spend about a year and a half to 2 years, roughly about 1,500 to 2,000 hours of training in each dog. Once we do that training, we then do another 3 to 6 months of public access exposure with fosters. That's after we've already done it. And then the dogs get to be placed. It's a really cool thing. I mean, I live for it. It's just the best. And what I love, I think, the most about it is the fact that we're taking dogs. We're not breeding dogs, although I do donate a ton of my Grand Champion Rhodesian Ridgeback puppies. We take dogs who were dumped or, like this beautiful lab, were just kind of in with families who maybe just didn't know how much of a commitment it was going to take. So when we get dogs donated, and we do take donated dogs, we don't take, you know, certain breeds that tend to be overly dominant or aggressive. Obviously, we're dealing with children and veterans with PTSD and mobility issues and all kinds of things. So we need dogs who aren't going to be dog aggressive. But we can fix that. It's just that when you're putting a service dog in with a weak energy of a person who needs that dog, you have to make sure that that dog is going to be more solid than the person, because otherwise the dog is going to need a service human. So let's talk about Ghost for a minute. And I love this dog. He's such a good boy. Everybody loves him. And there's no, it's not like somebody isn't taking care of him. The dog is super well cared for, very loved. But when you get a puppy, even, you know, Lab or a Golden, especially those two breeds, or an Aussie or a Border Collie or a herding breed mix, or some of the hounds, although I love my hounds, but you get, you know, or like a high energy breed, like a Jack Russell, Parson Russell Terrier, Fox Terrier, Chihuahuas, you know, they have a lot of zip to them. You better know that they're not going to just calm down the minute they get into your house, right? They're going to need a lot of time. If you don't have that time, you're never going to have a service dog. You're never going to have a well-behaved pet. But don't look at the quick little gimmicks and gadgets. Oh, let me go get a shock collar and zap the dog. Because the most important thing when you're training your own, or if you're training for us and you're working with these dogs, and we do accept fosters and we do put you through some pretty incredible training, and we have several facilities around the country. What's great about it is you can see the progress. And I'm going to be documenting this very sweet dog, Ghost. Progress. He's a beautiful black lab, wonderful, just beautiful temperament, but he's very exuberant. He has a ton of energy, and you have to understand that he's going to have a lot of energy even when you don't. So when people want to get a dog, a lot of times I'll always interview them and say, like, okay, what's your lifestyle? What kind of things do you enjoy? How often are you going to be going out? Do you jog? Do you hike? Are you athletic? Or are you a couch potato? Or do you jog 3 days a week and a couch potato the rest of the time? Because that's its own problem. Because the dog gets used to doing it sometimes, and then he thinks he's going to do it every day, and then they annoy you because they're like, hey, let's go for a big jog, and you know your kneecaps are falling off, and you can't do that every day. But this is going to be great because he's such a good dog, and we're going to have a lot of our staff working with them. We'll be posting videos. And probably put it on to Merlin's Kids. And if you want to go on to Merlin's Kids Service Dogs on Facebook, and if you wanted to look at the website, it's merlinskids.org, because we're a nonprofit, so it's www.merlinskids.org. When you see, and you'll see some crazy stuff. When you see what we do, you're going to be blown away. We do group safe spots with kids and their dogs. We might have anywhere from maybe 6 to usually we're higher up 15, 16 dogs for 2 to 3 hours. And they're all on a little tiny mat, like a little bath mat almost. And we place these safe spots in our Missouri facility, which is, we've got one room that's about a 3,600 square foot training room. We have 3 beautiful buildings, and it's funny because some of the dogs, you can literally take this little mat that we give them, we put it on the ground, they will just hit the deck, and they will stay there until we invite them to come off. And when you do that with one dog, you know, there's always your local obedience trainer who has one great, like, 8-year-old Lab or Golden that just gets along with everyone. Well, it was going to be a great dog regardless of if you were a dog trainer or not, let's face it. But when you do that with 15, 16 dogs of different varieties, different backgrounds, don't know each other, aren't related to each other, you know, it's pretty impressive. And we're going to be doing that with our very, very, very sweet and wonderful Ghost. So the first thing we're doing, and I've been working with, you know, him a lot, but the first thing that we're going to be doing with him is working on his leash work. Now, he's great on a leash for me and for most of my staff, but remember, he is a puppy still. So that's the biggest problem when you have a dog who's, you know, let's say 8 months to maybe 1.5 years old, because they look like they're grown up on the outside. My husband was like 6'3" when he was 13. So everybody thought he was really old. I mean, he was like 6 feet tall when he was 10. So he was 6'6" when he was fully grown. So you have to look at the age, the chronological age, not what the dog looks like, but actually his behavioral age. So think about it's like a terrible twos or a toddler or the, teenager years, like, oh boy, anybody who's got a couple of teenagers that, make you wonder why you ever had kids. But that, they get through it, and that's the point. So what do you do when you have a new dog that you get and you're saying, hey, I want to train him to be a service dog? Well, first thing is temperament, temperament, temperament. It's like in real estate, location, location, location. Temperament, temperament, temperament. So the most important thing is that the dog is confident, not dominant. If he's too much, then you're going to have problems because he's going to get either protective or he's going to diss you and tell you to go, go fly a kite. But the idea being, you want a dog who is confident so that he's not afraid. You want a dog that if he is shocked or surprised, that he doesn't run, that maybe he just kind of like, ooh, like if somebody touched you and you just kind of move a little bit, but you don't run. That's the temperament you want. You don't want a dog who's a runner, especially if you're planning to use this dog for mobility, tether, or hold on to it. And if you have any kind of weakness, where you are using mobility or autism or anything like that, but if you do have any kind of weakness and you're using for a mobility dog, you got to be really wicked careful because what can happen is the dog can actually knock you over or knock other people over. So you want a dog who, the second thing or third thing actually is a dog who wants to work. Don't pick the dog who you're constantly annoying him. Come on, Fluffy. Come on, let's go out. You want that dog, kind of like what you want with a narcotics dog or a cancer detection dog, which is obviously, you guys know I've done cancer detection and narcotics both, but cancer detection for 20-something years now. You want a dog who's not high energy, but has energy. So that when you're traveling or when it's downtime, you don't want him running around. Because remember, if you're training a dog that potentially is going to have a scent work tied into his skills, let's say a diabetic alert, which, it's not hard, it's just time consuming, or a seizure, although most people can't train the dogs to find seizures because many seizures you cannot actually predict. Some you can. Or cortisol, like we do, or adrenaline, or if you have like Addison's or whatever. So it really depends on what you need that dog for. But if you need a dog who's going to be, helping you, make sure that the dog is going to fit your lifestyle. Because if the dog isn't fitting your lifestyle, then he's not going to work out. Because if he's got too much energy and you want to lay around, or if he's panting constantly, dogs can't smell stuff when they're panting. Walk in, if you have a cold, or if you breathe through your mouth, if you close your nose off with like little swim clips that close your nostrils off, and now walk in for an apple pie, you won't be able to smell that. You won't smell a fire because you need to use your nose to bring the nares and the flare of the nostrils. Actually, with the dog, it has something, it has like a, almost like a turbine, and they have something called Jacobson's organ. Jacobson's organ is an olfactory delight. It's basically this incredible part of a dog's nose where the smells and scents waft through it and over it, and all of a sudden they can smell like anything and everything. And it's great, even like a pug, right? Could smell it. However, if the dog is panting, it cannot smell through its nose or very minimally. So that's why we have to make sure that we always, always, always are careful to choose the dog and choose with your brain, not with your heart. You are going to love whatever dog you get. Don't pick the wrong one. Because you're going to pick the wrong one and then you're stuck with it. And I've seen a lot of people, and I mean a lot of people, even when there was a woman with a golden, the dog wanted to kill my Savannah when we were at the fire department investigators conference, FDIC. in Indianapolis one year. This dog, and she kept telling me, can you just leave already? Can you just go? And I'm like, my dog is going to the bathroom, you know, and I got to clean it up. And I said, why is your dog, you know, being aggressive? And she's not aggressive. She just doesn't like other dogs. And I'm like, well, is that okay? And she didn't like that. So that dog was neurotic. It was fear aggressive. And I'm a canine behaviorist. I know what I'm talking about. This dog was fear aggressive. So what kind of great service dog is that? And how cruel is that to take a dog who's afraid and gets to that fever pitch where it's starting to go after other dogs? And, you know, that's really not cool. I would never take a dog who didn't want to do it or who wasn't cut out for the service dog work and put it as a service dog. Why would you do that? That'd be like taking somebody who hates skiing but loves ice skating and saying, well, you're not allowed to ice skate. You're only allowed to ski. And they break their leg. And they could have been an Olympic champion skater, but you're forcing them to do something that wasn't natural to them or that they didn't love. And I think that's where people stop realizing that, you know, dogs are dogs and dogs do have feelings. Do they think exactly as we do? No. Heck, men and women, like, we're almost the same species, men and women, and like, we can't understand each other. So how do you expect to, you know, really understand what the dog wants? But again, the goal is finding the right dog. If you do have somebody, and again, not a dog trainer, unless it's somebody who legitimately has trained at least, I'd say at least 50 to 100 service dogs, then I'll believe that you know what you're doing. But when you've trained one or two, you've trained one or two. It's like we always say with autistic kids, and people say, oh, I know about autism. I have an autistic niece. When you know one child with autism, you know one child with autism. Everything is different. Every disease, every condition, every person is different. So you take a person with a disability, they're very different. And it's the same thing with dogs. There isn't if I had a dollar for every time people ask me, what's the perfect breed or what's the perfect dog for my child who has X, Y, or Z? And I'll say, well, I don't know your child. I need to meet with your child. I need to evaluate your child. I need to see how your child interacts with several of my dogs who have perfect temperaments, but different temperaments, so that I can see which of them engages. Now, does your child engage with dogs, or is your child completely not interested in dogs? And we have that, where we know if we find the right one, and we'll go through 10 or 12 or 15 dogs or whatever it takes. But when you're training a dog, you've got to make sure that that dog is going to be the dog for you for not 1 year, not 2 years, but for 10 years. Even if the dog doesn't make it for 10 more years, you have to always assume that the dog is going to be around, and you want to make sure that that dog has good health, good temperament. You're going to learn all of this in our classes. You can actually, again, get the classes. You don't automatically you don't apply and like, oh, look, I'm in. We actually do have a very strict screening process. But if you do get in, what you would learn is how to choose the dog, how to choose the right dog for that child or individual, how to like basically screen to see what those tasks and skills are that you need, and then look backward to see what kind of dog would be able to accomplish that, and then make sure that you have a dog who can connect with an individual with special needs, whatever the special needs are. So there's a whole lot of things. It's not the just easiest thing in the world all the time. Sometimes, you know, it's not the first dog or the second dog or the third dog. And I'm not telling you to go and get three or four or five dogs and hope that one will work. But in my professional opinion and all my experience for many, 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 many years, more than I'd like to admit, I have figured that pretty much it's about 1 in 100 dogs, just in general, in the world. 1 in 100 dogs has the ability to become a top flight service dog. Probably 10 of the 100 could be maybe therapy dog. And those would be like the doodle things and the, you know, the happy goldens and the labs are just like, duh, 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 duh. Because a service dog has to be focused on an individual when that individual needs him or her. Whereas a therapy dog is just like the happy camper dog. So goldens make wonderful, not all of them, obviously, because I've done some pretty aggressive ones, but for the most part, let's agree that goldens are pretty darn sweet dogs. And my friend Chris has two that are just beautiful and wonderful and lovely. And, you know, they'd be great therapy dogs because they are happy all the time and people get happy petting them and all. So that's what a therapy dog, but a service dog, you need a wicked smart dog who's not going to use his intelligence against you or to get in trouble. And that's where a lot of people get into trouble. They go, oh, I'm going to get a German Shepherd. Well, German Shepherd's a protective breed. They're not necessarily an aggressive breed, and there can be wonderful. We've had three German Shepherds through the years who made it through the program, although one failed out for her hips, which we knew at the beginning. But they were fine. They were good. They weren't aggressive, and we worked with them a lot. But let's face it, you know, we all hear the, oh, you know, the neighbor got attacked. What was it? We know the few breeds that it tends to be. But you know how many people get bitten by these poodle mixes and these designer dogs? You have no clue. It's crazy. So it doesn't mean that if you get one, it's going to be aggressive. Don't take it that way. But don't go for something and spend money because somebody tells you, oh, yeah, I breed them to become service dogs. Really? If you breed them to become service dogs, how many of them have become service dogs? And for what purpose? What tasks or jobs have they been trained to perform? Oh, well, you know, the kids pet them. Well, that's a therapy dog. No, it's just for him. I know, but petting a dog and you feeling better has nothing to do with being a service dog. A service dog is task trained to perform a disability mitigating service for you. Same way as if you, let's say, were walking through a mall and, you know, you have crutches, right? Your crutches would be allowed to go in the mall with you or in the supermarket with you. If you have a wheelchair, you are allowed to bring the wheelchair because the wheelchair mitigates your disability. It doesn't fix it, but it makes it easier for you to be able to enjoy all the same privileges of going to the same places as someone without the disability would be able to enjoy. So a dog is an adaptive or assistive device. A dog isn't given rights because it's a dog. The dog is given rights because of the disability of the individual using the dog. That's why it is actually a crime if you lie and say that your dog is a service dog, because you're lying and claiming you have a disability. Very similar to if you were trying to collect benefits, other benefits, because you're collecting a benefit, right? If you're collecting benefits and you lie and you say you're disabled and you go and you get SSD or SSI from the government, you think they're going to just say, oh, it's okay. You think you're disabled. You're just faking it. No. So that's why when people start faking a service dog, it's really a problem, because it literally is basically taking anybody with a disability who has a dog, service dog, and it's just, you know, basically just being super disrespectful to them. Now, one thing I did see, one of very special young lady did send me some things that she had seen, some patches, wanted to know if she could put them on her service vest. And one of them said, refuse my dog and me access and you'll face a lawsuit and bad publicity. And the other one said something like, don't pet me or something, 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 right? And, you know, I look at that as what genius made those patches. I mean, can you imagine walking in with a patch that says, don't deny me access, even though I'm probably fake, because no legitimate agency is ever, ever, ever going to let somebody put a patch like that on. Oh, my Lord, that's pretty bad. But that's what happened. So you don't want to walk in with a dog who's not ready to go in. And you don't want to fake it because it makes it hard for other people who do have disabilities to take their legitimate service dogs in. And I don't care if you want to do self-train on a dog. It's fine because sometimes people with disabilities, listen, you have a lot of time. I mean, we all have a little more time than we did in the past because of COVID. So now might be a great time to be able to train. And we do that also. We do have classes that we actually teach you how to train your dog, and then you can come and learn how to do that the right way. But, you know, just let's all try to be nice to each other. We're all in the same world. We're all living in the same air, you know, we're breathing the same air, drinking the same water. You know, can we just be nice to each other and stop faking it and making it hard because you think, you know, it's a victimless crime, but it's not. Because when you bring your fake service dog in, and it, you know, defecates or, you know, it lifts its leg, which is more troubling than defecating because defecating sometimes if they're distressed for whatever's going on or they're cold, that can happen. But, you know, happens, right? Like my book, which is where I get it from. You know, and by the way, happens, S-H-H-H, happens, Dog Behavior 101, great book for anybody who gets a dog, a first dog, a tenth dog, an expert. Everybody loves it. But, you know, really think about trying instead to help each other and to make life easier for each other. I never could understand why people will just be mean to each other. Why do you want to be mean to somebody who's saving lives? Why do you want to be mean to somebody who maybe you're jealous of, right? Why do you want to try to hurt somebody who's doing something you could never do on your own because you're not good enough? Why do people do that and want to hurt somebody who's good? The reason is because they can't do it themselves, so they want to take somebody else down, and we see it all the time. And to me, a lot of these people who are going in with fake service dogs and fake IDs and patches that say, I'm going to sue your ass if you deny me access. But guess what? By putting that patch on your fake vest, guess what? Everybody knows you're a fake. And if your dog is reacting and your dog is acting like an imbecile, even if it were a legitimately trained, real legitimate service dog, you can still be asked to leave. Your dog still has to behave. So there's no substitute for intelligence, for training, and for tolerance. And that, my friends, is going to be the last thing we talk about today. And I wish everybody a good, healthy, happy weekend. Looks like this weekend's going to be cool. And then we got 60 degrees next week. So those of you who got too short of a poodle cut on your dogs, well, you'll be get a little bit of a reprieve next week. Have a great weekend. Take care.